matter what people say. Yeah. We got it going on. Yeah. Who cares about what we did?
You know me. I'm the hottest in this.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. We have made it to the second week of January, although many of you have been posting up these memes that we are in the 47th day of December 2020. And I totally understand where you guys are coming from, because it doesn't feel like we've entered into a new year. It feels like we are literally continuing the year of 2020. I mean, this past couple of days have once again shown us that shit is real out here. The struggle is real. It continues to be real, even when we have entered into a totally new year. But I will say that I am grateful. I am grateful to still be alive. I am grateful to be COVID-free. I am grateful to be breathing. And even though Olympus has fallen and the U.S. government is going to shit, I am still here. I am breathing. And I have all intentions of fulfilling all of the goals and the aspirations and the dreams that I have set out for myself to have accomplished in the year of 2021. And this is not on some New Year's resolution stuff. Even before, like, I had goals even from 2019 that I said I would accomplish in the year of 2020. Looking forward, and not 2020, but 2021, right? Looking forward. And I fully intend, although I've been derailed because of 2020, I fully intend to achieve those goals in the year of 2021 by any means necessary. So this year is starting to look like last year. Some of you believe that we did not enter a new year, that we're still in 2020. And even if that is the case, you know, there's a lot of noise, right? There's a lot of noise in these streets. There's a lot of noise going on right now, but try to drown it out. Still stay informed with what's going on. Keep your ears to the street, be informed, but don't let the noise knock you off of your game. I know many of us, I think it was Thursday that the Capitol was stormed. I don't know. A lot of us ended up spending half of the workday really just paying attention to what was going on. And it's understandable, because this it was happening right in front of our faces. We were watching treason in action. But that's over now, right? I mean, at least the live footage is over now. And although there are things still going on that we should still keep our fingers, you know, on the pulse of, we have to move on with everyday life. And as Black people, understanding that this really ain't about us. We actually witnessed just another reenactment of the Civil War with white on white violence. We just need to stay home, strategize, and figure out what the next moves are for us as Black people. But either way, we have a really, really great show today. We are going to talk about the Capitol situation, but not exactly in the way that you might think. I have my resident co-host guest by the name of Kentucky Washington, who is going to grace us once again. Those of you who have heard her on the show know that she is not about the shit. So you're going to get some really interesting perspectives as to what's going on. But more importantly, as Black people, what should we be doing right now, right? So definitely keep it locked and stay tuned to listen to her. She's now slowly becoming my resident guest for all things ridiculous with this country. So her perspective is always, you know, welcomed and always, you know, always interesting. So you guys will definitely enjoy it. But before we get into the meat of the show, we have our preliminaries, and we're not going to go into too many of them today, because Kentucky and I definitely did push the envelope in terms of time today. But it's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet-skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Hop in my fleek, you're lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key!
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is maggots. Maggots, delusional Trump supporters. Example, look at those maggots cry and whine because they can't accept reality. And that's exactly what we saw on Thursday. I believe it was Thursday. I think Thursday was the day. But that's exactly what we saw. White nationalists, quote unquote revolutionaries, treasonous individuals, Benedict Arnold, storming the Capitol. Why? Because they can't accept the reality that Trump is out. Like, he is gone. He did not win the election. He is no longer your superhero. Get over it and let's move forward. Let's move forward. But they could not accept it. And it just goes to show the lengths that white people will go to defend what they believe is their honor, right? It just goes to show the great lengths, to the point of treason and conspiracy, to the point of killing your own people. Like, I think it might have been, what, 4 or 5 individuals died? Not black people, but, you know, these white nationalists, these white I don't know what to call them, but they died at the hands of each other, right? And it's crazy to see. But history will tell us that this is how this country gets down, right? Hence the Civil War and all these other wars and battles and whatnot that took place, you know, with white on white crime and white on white violence. Meanwhile, we try to protest in peace by taking a knee and, you know, protesting the lives of black individuals who were slain for no just cause. And yet, you know, we are, as black people, people of color, are accused of being treasonous, being anti-patriotic, anti-government, and all this other stuff. Interesting tale of two countries within a country, if you ask me. But either way, that was the word or phrase of the week. So it is now time for the big up of the week. Watch it. And you can big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. So this week's big up of the week actually goes to two individuals. It does go to Raphael Warnock, who claimed victory as being the first black senator in the state history of Georgia. Georgia's the state. But I would also like to give the big up of the week to Stacey Abrams, because she has shown time and time again her tenacity, her willingness to work. I mean, this woman is, I don't even know, like the epitome of black girl magic, right? We watched her, you know, enter into the political realm and we saw that she was, you know, considered to be, I guess, an individual who would be a candidate for vice president. We saw that didn't work out. Kamala Harris is the one that ended up getting the gig, as I call it. But even with the quote unquote defeats that this woman experienced when she was running for political office in the state of Georgia, she continued to rise and to show her worth and to prove, you know, her standing in government. I mean, Georgia is a blue state now, and I would like to say, and I think many would agree with me, that it is really all thanks to Stacey Abrams. And, you know, you could say what you want about her, but this is the epitome of black women working, right? And so I definitely wanted to give her the big up of the week as well. Although, again, Raphael did what he needed to do, and he got to this very prestigious position, this historical win for the state. But I cannot leave out Stacey Abrams and the work that she did to rally the troops, to rally the people of Georgia, to make this win happen and to make this win take place. So big up to both Raphael Warnock, but I'm going to say the biggest big up really goes to Stacey Abrams and her work in mobilizing the voters in Georgia for this historical win. Now, with every high, you guys know that there is a low. And there are so many lows this week, to be honest. I mean, there were so many lows, and like, I don't even know which one to really like put forth as the womp womp of the week. Between Soho Karen, and that's the woman who, you know, was arrested over the cell phone attack. She had accused a young boy. I think he might have been, I don't know, 11 or 12, a young black boy, of stealing her cell phone. It was a whole big situation. She's been in the news because she was recently being interviewed by Gayle King, and she was just so disrespectful and just unremorseful for her actions. And again, you know, white supremacy at its finest, white privilege at its finest. But because of all of the Capitol drama that was going on this week, I feel like the womp womps of the week honestly go to these white nationalists that stormed the Capitol. I mean, there were some very interesting characters that really like graced the stage. But I think the one that honestly stood out the most to me was this young man who apparently is the son of a Brooklyn judge who made his way to the Capitol. And all right, so I'll just go into the story. So the title, this was from thegothamist.com, and the title of the article was "Trump Forever: Costumed Capitol Rioter is the Son of a Brooklyn Supreme Court Judge," which is so disturbing because this individual hails from Brooklyn and he was mixed up in this whole mess, right? Which goes to show that even in Brooklyn, New York, the Trump supporters are alive and well. A lot of people think that because it's Brooklyn, because it's New York, that we don't have none of that nonsense here. And we have the nonsense here. So Brooklyn resident Aaron Mostofsky is the son of the Brooklyn Supreme Court judge. How can I pronounce this name? It's Shlomo Mostofsky. He's a prominent modern Orthodox figure in the Brooklyn community, former president of the National Council of Young Israel, and he was recently elected to the Kings County Supreme Court last January with the backing of the Brooklyn Democratic Party. So here we have his son, and there are video clips for those of you who are interested in this. The guy looks like a modern day Harry Potter, like straight up. If you listen to him speak, he sounds like he's definitely, on some sort of spectrum, or he is a couple of, trees short of a forest. Or he might have been on LSD, because maybe he had to get on drugs to get the courage to do what he did. I don't know. But either way, he was amongst the many, you know, insurgents that stormed the Capitol from Brooklyn, New York. Son of a judge that was backed from a Democratic Party. I mean, talk about disgrace, talk about shame. You know, it's crazy to me. So he gets the womp womp of the week because he had no problem saying that he was from Brooklyn, New York. And if I were him, I would have been like, I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, or I would have just kept that information out. But he was dressed up in full fur. He was posed with a shield that he stole from a cop. Like, can we talk about like stupid.com? Like, I don't know who his employer is. Maybe he's not employed, but if he is employed, I hope he is about to lose his job, because this was like tomfoolery at his finest. Now, of course, the reason, you know, he got most of the highlight is because, you know, this is a New York based radio show, right? I'm living in Brooklyn, New York, and now we have this individual who's from Brooklyn, New York, whose father is a judge in Brooklyn, New York. It makes you wonder. It makes you really wonder, right? But aside from him, there were so many other characters that could have gotten this award. I mean, the individual who sat in Nancy Pelosi's desk, the individual who sat in the Senate, in the chief Senate chair. Like, there's so many people that could have gotten this award. But I reserve this one for him because he is, you know, it's the things that he said, and you guys have to listen to it. Like, he was just like, the election was stolen, and, you know, New York, you know, is a red state. And I was just like, when was the last time New York, I believe, was a red state? Was during the Reagan era, right? And that was a long ass time ago. So I don't know what he's talking about, but I don't know. Aaron Mostofsky from Brooklyn, New York, son of Shlomo Mostofsky, Supreme Court judge in Brooklyn, gets the womp womp of the week. So now we are on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone. I'm here with my very special guest, Kentucky. Kentucky, say hello.
Hello, everybody. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. Happy New Year again. Although I think I said last time on the show, you could only say Happy New Year within the first 7 days. So today's the 10th. So we're no longer saying Happy New Year.
I don't even think somebody said this is day. Wait, what is today?
Oh, December. It's like December 50th. 2020.
Yes. Yeah, oh, so yeah, it's like the never-ending year of chaos and confusion. Yeah, so we're here,
right? We can't, you know, even though I saw a couple of memes that said 2020 literally went and put on a wig and presented itself as 2021.
I mean, we couldn't get 5 days in, 6 days in without chaos. Day five, we was like, okay, we cool. This is about to pop off. We're going to be good. And the next thing we know, we were like, damn. Jesus Christ. I was literally on a Zoom when all of that was going on.
I remember because I was in the chat group talking and I'm like, where is Kentucky?
Yeah, like it was business. And I kept seeing people looking at their phones and looking at their phones. And I'm trying to like, I'm like, why are they playing me? And then all of a sudden the guy was like, I'm so sorry. I just got a text that they are running into the Capitol building. And I was like, wait, what? Yeah. So I couldn't even see what was happening because I'm trying to stay, you know.
Mm-hmm. Trying to stay focused.
Right. And then when it was over, I looked at my phone and it was like 50 million text messages breaking. I'm like, what the heck happened? And like, it was literally in an hour. An hour's time, the whole world crumbled. And I was just like, you know what?
Olympus had fallen.
So when all these people say, like, I'm going to take a time out from the news and so I'm going to turn off and the news and social media for 3 days, girl, you will die. The whole world would have exploded.
You will die. You're going to be literally like, I mean, if you take your eyes away from social media for an hour, you're already like behind. So yeah. But yeah, but like you said, we're here, we're breathing, and we're still, you know, remaining positive that, you know, we're going to continue to be here breathing. That's the most I can guarantee for myself, or I can hope to guarantee. But Kentucky, tell us a little bit about who you are again, because even though you are now becoming the resident co-host for all things, you know, all things ridiculous in this country now, the commentator of all things ridiculous, you know, there's always new people listening. So just give a brief rundown who you are, what you do, you know.
Hi, my name is Kentucky. I'm a diversity inclusion specialist, so professional. So I do D&I work with different firms and companies, basically telling white people to be nice to folks who are not white. So that's what I do. And I'm a big supporter of Rita. So when she calls me, I put on my cape and I fly wherever she needs to be and make it happen. That's it.
And Kentucky is so animated. It's like she's one of those friends that, you know, not only is she super knowledgeable, and sometimes we don't always agree on the same thing, but she's super knowledgeable and animated at the same time. And so that combination makes for a great, you know, a great guest.
Girl, I'll be trying to keep it 100. Everybody ain't ready, though. Everybody ain't ready for it, but, you
sometimes
know.
I'm not even ready, to be honest. Sometimes I'm not even ready. But, you know, it's like you got to, you know, a lot of the things that Kentucky has, I'm going to say predicted, right, has come to pass. So
let me tell you, speaking of predictions, I had a friend of mine. We literally had a falling out last year this time about that Jay Morrison dude, speaking of predictions, and that Jay Morrison guy who did the whole Black Wall Street thing. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but I think he went and collected all this money from all these black people to do all this real estate. And I told her, I said, sis, that dude is a con artist and he's going to jail. She was livid, right? She was, we fell out. And now look what happened. So I'm just saying, I'm not trying to say I'm clairvoyant, but what I do is make sure that I try to sit back and examine stuff, or, you know, all the facts, and try to keep, you know, you got to keep your third eye open. There's a lot of things that you can see, but then also being an avid studier of history, a lot of stuff that repeats itself, which is what we've been dealing with this week. Mm-hmm. So there you
go. Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, with you, one thing I can say is that you definitely keep yourself informed, right? Like you definitely come with the facts and you definitely do the research. A lot of people who have the third eye or claim to be clairvoyant, which they might actually have that gift, they don't have the other half of it, right? They don't have the knowledge. They're just kind of like relying on their own intuition and whatever they ear hustled, and they're not reading and they're not researching. So it's like they come from a place of like, you know, whatever. So I think that that's also important to note.
Well, I was a college professor for 8 years. So with that, I mean, when you're an academician, as in addition to just kind of trying to make sure that you're staying on top of things, just in general, like it makes you nothing. When you see things, you always be like, you know what? I need to go and research this. I remember seeing Farrakhan on Donahue way back in the 80s. You can pull this clip. And when he came out, maybe it wasn't Farrakhan. Was it? Yeah, I think it was Farrakhan. I wanted to say maybe the other guy, Khalil Abdul-Muhammad, but I think it was Farrakhan. But he came out with a stack of books around him. And I think it was probably like 100 books. And he said, anything that I'm about to tell you, I can back it up in a book. And literally Donahue started asking questions and he started saying stuff and people said, this is egregious. And he told the guys, he said, come and grab, pull this book. He went straight to the page where he could quote the information that he got it from. And so it's important for us to not be shooting from the hip. When you also read and study, you can also make a proper analysis and not just be drinking the Kool-Aid. Like I was listening to a lot of chats on Clubhouse about this whole thing with Trump getting his all his social media taken down, and people were still on the surface level analysis of it, and they didn't really want to dig deep into why, what was really, really happening. Now we know there's stuff that we don't know, but I'm gonna tell you, like, there's a lot of stuff that we can, if you dig deep, you can see what it is. But we'll get into that in a second. I know you want to.
Today I definitely want to talk about, you know, the Olympus that has fallen, the Hunger Games situation that was taking place just the other day. I mean, I honestly felt like I was watching a reenactment of the Civil War, where the Confederates were storming, you know, the Union. It was just one of those things where, and it's hard, I've heard people say, like, I never in my life thought I would see such a thing. I mean, I don't think that I thought that I would see it, but not to that, like, dramatic, you know, extent where never in my years, because at this point shit keeps happening every day, and I can't even, you know, I can't even be surprised anymore when I see these things. But it was just very interesting, I think, as a person of color, again, to just be reminded on national TV how Black people are not valued, how we literally are, like, you know, considered to be like the cockroaches of this earth, and how, like, you know, government, right, even at the highest, you know, ends of government, like how we're not respected. Because when we look at our peaceful protests, individuals who have stood up for, you know, their beliefs, like Colin Kaepernick, and we're looking at the, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests, and not even just Black Lives Matter's protests, but like protests that occurred around Freddie Gray and all these other individuals, all these causes that we actually had legitimate standing to be out there and really, you know, protest, not riot, how we were, you know, depicted as just, you know, evil mongers and treasonous individuals and all this other stuff. And then here we are watching on live television treason occurring, you know, by white nationalists, right? And how their treatment, how they were essentially, they were actually let in. Like I saw that one post or that one video of when the cops really like opened up the gate and allowed these people to come in. And, you know, it was just very disgusting to see. Was I offended personally? No, because I already know my standing as a Black person in this country. But I think that right now we're just hearing a lot of people having so many different opinions about what took place and how to digest it. So I wanted to kind of have that conversation with you, because again, you're somebody who keeps your finger on the pulse. You know what's going on. You are a student of history. Like, what are your thoughts of what took place, you know, just a few days ago?
Well, so I, you know, in the beginning, people were all shocked and appalled. And I was on some Clubhouse group that where they were like, oh, I'm so drained. And I'm like, why are you guys so shocked? And I said, here's the biggest thing. this fight is not about us as a people. And we need to do what Trump says, stand down, you know what I'm saying? And stand by, because it is not about us, right? This is a civil war with white people for about white supremacy versus, you know, people. And I'm not saying all the folks are racist, they're not, but like there's people who just don't want it to be put out there that they're white supremacists. And there's, and it's white America that a few of them who are a little woke and saying, you know what? Maybe this is kind of whack. We shouldn't be like this. You know, they still want to preserve their whiteness, right? But they don't want, they know that, you know, times have changed and you kind of can't go, you can't go the route that these people are going. But I think the biggest problem that I had with the whole thing, like I was like, you know what? I'm not really that bothered by it. In fact, it was entertainment for me. I got my popcorn and sat there and watched the whole thing. I thought it was amazing. Right. But here's what was concerning. The concerning part was that legally it was, you know, it was conspiracy, right? It was seditious conspiracy. And what was really alarming was that how Trump and the Republicans orchestrated this overthrow of the American government. And it wasn't just in DC. Like, this thing was happening at state capitals simultaneously all across the country. Mm-hmm. So if you go and look at it there, it was happening in Atlanta, in it was Georgia. It was, I think it was 15 different cities, from Atlanta to Washington to Arizona. I mean, Colorado, I could go on. I think Missouri, all across the country, these people were told. So there was told to go here, which means there was an extremely intelligent ground game. Right. Mm-hmm. So when I was watching Trump on the golf course all those weeks after he was ticked off about not winning the election, my mom was like, why is he playing golf? I said, Mom, he's out there planning. I said, because out in there on the golf course, there's no surveillance. We can't hear what he's saying, you know, and people be looking at stuff on a surface level. Like, he's out there playing golf. He doesn't care. No, I was like, out there, he can get whatever bat phone he needs that cannot be traced. There's no cameras. That is his own property. There's no cameras out there. There's no devices out there to hear anything. I said, he is orchestrating something on a major level. Mm-hmm. The thing about that is that if they were able to organize this massive ground game, right? And I do believe those people were paid to come up there, because a lot of them are definitely folks of a extremely low socioeconomic demographic of white people. In fact, they probably the folks that live in the trailer park behind the Walmart right here in the city where I live, because I do know some people came from where I'm from. You know what I mean? They don't have the money to go across town. So how do you have the money to get all the way to DC?
Yeah.
And they were also, what people also need to remember about the whole, all that social media dismemberment, disbandment is, here's what happened. Maxie Waters said that the woman who got shot had a note on her basically to come in and kill her, right? So people had specific orders. It was an assassination attempt. These were hired hitmen. Mm-hmm. And people, the thing is that what America don't want, black folks in America don't want to face the fact that this was a full out orchestrated assassination attempt. So they had special orders to take out certain people. So you have a president who orchestrated, basically became the grand mafioso and decided that he was going to do hits on people. Mm-hmm. That's serious business. And the thing about these people is that he's also creating his own political party, the Trumpsters, because they're breaking away from the Republican Party, because everyone who walked in there said, hang Mike Pence. Yeah. So now he's mad with the Republicans, and then, you know, he's mad with the Democrats who wouldn't sign off on him, you know, winning the election, so to speak. And then you have people organized all over the country. Let me tell you, following a failed coup attempt is a successful one historically. So what people need to do is realize that this thing is not over. It is not over by any stretch of the imagination. This is, black people just need to stay where we are, like stay in your house right now, because they came with nooses. They had gallows set up outside. This was supposed to be a televised execution of people in Congress. Some of it was iconography, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of it was that these people had strict orders. And the way some of those folks were moving, like they were people who with strict military experience on the front lines. You could see how they moved. They have actually determined that those people were, that woman who went through that window had done a tour I don't know where she had been, but like she literally has done several tours. She was military trained. There was military tacticians in the front. This thing is not a joke, but it is not our fight.
Yeah. And I think that that's the important part that, you know, for us to understand as a people, because I feel like for whatever reason, there is a group of individuals, whenever it comes to things of the United States government matter, they feel like, you know, as Black people, we need to be involved. We need to be, you know, we need to be a part of the process. And I think all we need to be is informed, be informed as to what's going on, but stay your ass at home. Because the one thing that we can say, I mean, although we did see the images of the lone Black person, you know, a couple of Black people here and there rolling around, although I personally think that one of them was looking for his stimulus check, the one that showed up in the bubble jacket in the red.
Right.
You know, I think he was looking for a stimulus check or at least trying to get rid of some student loans. I feel like, you know, there weren't, like, Black people were not, you know, hurt in this particular, you know, melee, right? We were not, like, this was not our fight. We were not at the front lines. None of us died. And that's how it needs to remain. Like, when you have white nationalists storming the Capitol, or I don't even know if I consider them white nationalists, but vigilantes, right? Criminals storming the White House and killing each other and fighting each other in the barbaric nature that we know them to be. You know, you kind of just have to sit back, like you said, have your popcorn on deck, but really just, again, remind yourselves that we need to stay home. This is not for us to be involved in. Like, let them fight and kill themselves and do what they need to do.
And here's the thing, it just like the Civil War, this fight is, it's not our fight, but it is somewhat about us to a certain degree, in the sense that, you know, they did still have the Confederate flags. They did have the flag of the 13 colonies up there, the Betsy Ross flag. They were very clear on their messaging when it came to that it was about, you know, return to the good old days, that basically whatever this government regime is happening, it's going to overthrow white supremacy and white nationalism, which still means the oppression of Black people. Mm-hmm. Right. But the thing is that Black people made the mistake during the Civil War. We're trying to fight in the Civil War. Right. Because we were like, it's about slavery. It's about us. And it's fine. But Black people got killed behind, you know what I'm saying, folk, other people's stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And granted, you know, there was a place for us in certain respects. I still, you know, kind of feel six in one hand, half a dozen another. I just feel like if these people feel so strongly, then, you know, they're gonna do what they did in the Civil War, which was kill each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in that respect, we have to be very careful and cognizant about what we do and where we stand. I do think that acting like there's nothing going on is not the issue. It's not what we should do. But I do think that, you know, understanding what this really is. This is the fall of the American empire, right? And every empire does fail after a certain time. And here is the flip side of this. They're asking for all 50 of the Republican senators to resign, right? If they catch these people up, which to me, you know, legal hat coming on, right? This is the base. This is the hub and spoke theory of conspiracy that we learned in. This is technical law school stuff. You have the centralized conspiracy, which is the center hub, and all the spokes are all these other these mini conspiracies that happen that are part of the central conspiracy. If all these people are involved in this conspiracy to overthrow the government, anything involved in the conspiracy, you're supposed to be legally responsible for, i.e., people getting killed, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have. I mean, help me if I'm wrong, because we're both law school graduates. But like, if I remember correctly, with the conspiracy, if someone dies as part of this conspiracy, you kind of go down with the blood is on your hands. So the thing is that now we have people who have died. Right. Now you have people who were injured. Now you have, you know, sedition. You have all these violent acts that took place. Right. Then. If the Senate execute the law like they're supposed to, and there was even footage today of a congressman in I think Oregon open the doors for people. If all these people are actually part of allow this crap to go down, and you really clean house, then that allows room for Black people to come in and take over. Mm-hmm. Because now it's like if all 50 of the senators have to go. Which technically, if you haven't Black folks doing this, they would. Then what does that leave us? This is opportunity for us to step in and regain power on what we did back in the day during Reconstruction, because that's really what happened. They didn't have people there. So Black people came in and basically were in positions of power. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, things to think about.
Yeah, definitely things to think about. And again, that's exactly why it's important to still keep your finger on the pulse. You know, like I agree. Don't let this consume you when you're in such a bad mood. Like, oh, I can't think and eat for the next 2 days because Olympus has fallen. But I think the strategy part is really what we need to do, you know, on the inside, right? Within our respective groups, right? Be strategizing on, you know, where can we capitalize off of this, you know, or off of this mess, right? How can we position ourselves in a way where we can, like you said, take power and whatnot? So I think it's definitely a time for strategy. I feel like we always need to be in strategy mode, but I think right now with everything going on, instead of trying to really figure out, you know, what the next move is, is there going to be an inauguration? Where, you know, are they going to do this? Are they going to do that? We really need to focus, like, what, you know, this so-called Black agenda that keeps being thrown out. Like, I think this is the time that we need to really be, you know, strategic. But now that I brought that up, what do you think about this Black agenda talk?
So let me go back to that real quick. I think this is going to force their hand to have to respect and acknowledge things, because they do keep saying, oh, Pat, this has been Black Lives Matter. Womp womp. I mean, we all know this. I'm so tired of people saying that. Right. I mean, if you're a conscious Black person, you get it why they weren't killed. Okay. But the thing is that it's forcing their hand, because what I was looking at, not only were they saying that they realized that, I think the guy who launched Parler used to be a Secret Service agent, right? So I think, I don't want to lie about what president he was under, but they're realizing that there were people that are Secret Service men, and people right there in the Capitol were actual infiltrators. And that means they probably were white. So I already noticed that Joe Biden has, like, his number one Secret Service guy is a big Black dude. I don't know if you've noticed that, but everywhere he rolls is this Black guy who's like right on his behind. And if you see the Clintons, after that Monica Lewinsky thing, they only roll with Black people. It's always a Black person holding a bag, holding the phone, making sure. So what I've noticed is that white people who've been in situations where shit was compromised, excuse me for saying the S word, where stuff was compromised, what they did was they ended up basically surround themselves with Black people because they felt like that's who they could trust. Right. And so if they're starting to show that a lot of these people were white nationalists, then they're going to feel like a lot of these white people may not can be trusted, which is going to be bad for them, but it could be good for us, because that means they're going to bring it. And not to say that we don't have Black people who infiltrate and are like, we do. But the thing is that it's not going to be about that particular agenda. So that means they're probably going to have to make a lot of these people be folks of color in those spaces, because they're going to have to figure out how to weed out the other stuff.
Yeah.
And which, like I said, if they start removing these senators and other political officials who are involved in that, then that also lends for a space for people of color to be more involved. So Black agenda, you mean for Biden?
I mean Black agenda in general. Like I feel like when we keep hearing this Black agenda, there's nothing really specific about it. We need the government to come up with the Black agenda. So it's not even really about what Biden's agenda for people are once he hits office. I mean, that's part of the conversation too, but it's just this blanket statement of, you know, we just need a Black agenda. You know, unless there's a Black agenda, we're not voting. Unless there's a Black agenda, we're not doing X, Y, and Z. The government don't care about us, boo, 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 all this extra stuff. Again, centered around this notion of a Black agenda that I am still trying to understand. What's on the agenda?
I think they're trying to pull together the agenda. Part of it, a lot of it looks like reparations, and also people trying
some reparation stuff.
Yeah. You know? But you know what? I understand why the reparations thing is big, because they will speak openly about Native American reparations. They will speak openly about, you know, Holocaust reparations. Even for the Japanese with the, you know, World War II.
Yeah.
There you go. Like, they will speak, but they will not speak about us. And I think what Black people have really been asking for, which is why I say this is not our fight, let these folks do what they're going to do with each other, is that we have built this country. We have given America all the culture that it has, because what is American food? Hot dogs. You know what I'm saying? That's all they got. Hamburgers. Bologna sandwiches. Right. But like everything else is, you know, Black people have definitely, and this is global, right? You know, Black people have given America everything it has culturally, to be honest. You know, there's a few things they have attributed to. And every fight that America has had has been about Black people. It's always been about slavery.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's always So we have been the central, for some reason, these people are highly disturbed by Black people. It's like, y'all spend all your time being concerned about what the heck we gonna do. And, you know, and that lets you know that they know that if they start making everything, you know, fair and equitable, we gonna take off and run with it, because we already, you know, we already run.
We already got, we're running with one shoe on. Imagine if we had another shoe.
Right. We already hitting the ground. I mean, so the only difference is that, you know, when it comes to a lot of the business stuff, when it comes to money, they intentionally leave us out. Mm-hmm. And or when we do get the money, they find a way to hem us up. So they're always trying to keep us behind. And you got to remember that a lot of these folks got their wealth, you know, on the backs of Black folks, whether it was through slavery, old money. You got to remember half these banks, mm-hmm. you know, owned slaves. You know what I'm saying? Whether it was here to Caribbean, because a lot of Caribbean people forget, you know, why they were chopping sugarcane and we were picking cotton. It was the same, you know, group of white folks who was owning y'all on the Caribbean, in the Caribbean, as they were owning us in Louisiana and Texas and Mississippi and South Carolina. It was the same dude. And so these people have generational wealth, right? And it's difficult to catch up with that, with generational wealth people who've had money since the 1800s, yeah. And then you get a good job next week, right? So now you get a good job next week, making money. It don't even, like, dude, they've been having wealth.
Yeah,
they have land, and they have big homes and stuff to go to. They have, like, when those people have those plantations that's been in the family for 150 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's serious business. And here folks be arguing about a dang apartment they renting, or they want to you know, act like, well, mama, you know, they want to sell grandmama house when she died. That, like, these people have had stuff in the family 150, 200 years. Those castles over in England have been there forever, mm-hmm. right? Like, and here we mad about stuff you just got yesterday. So, and remember, that's all slave money. All that stuff is
still, yeah.
Right. So we have to be very good. So when we look at the Black agenda, I think it's going to take a lot to pull that together. And I think that really what we just want is white America to do something and make things fair and equitable.
Yeah.
But it's not in their best interest to do so.
No. And that's where the problem lies, right? Knowing that that's not something that is in their portfolio to do, right? That's not an agenda item on their end. It's kind of like, well, then what do we do as Black people in this country when we are faced with this conundrum, in a sense? Like,
well, so let me tell you what we do. We do what we're doing right now because they're all turning on each other at this moment. Mm-hmm. So you have to get up. So you have to get up legs and walk. And there was an article I read this morning about by Charles Blow.
Yeah,
I think it was the New York Times. And he was talking about Black people need to go and reclaim their power in the South. Mm-hmm. And in that article, he was saying how there is a disillusionment of Black people in the North, where we think that we have power when we don't have as much as we think we do, because people, you know, aren't really living. They're living in buildings on top of each other. A lot of the progressive liberals are a lot of white people who kind of run the show more than anything, but they make us feel like we are. And there's a lot of that. But Georgia has shown us that if we just go and focus and sit our butts down, we can make some stuff happen. And the South is where basically all the Black population was before. Mm-hmm. Folks fled the South because of Jim Crow. But when we fled, we actually dispersed our power. Mm-hmm. So they were saying the states with the largest population of Black people were like Louisiana, I think it was South Carolina, and Mississippi, right? So Georgia was able to do what it did because there's such a big influx of Black people to the South. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost thinking that, you know, kind of like doing what Charles Blow said, which is like, you know what? We're spending a lot of energy spinning our wheels in places that, you know, these people have made it clear that they're always going to be in power, right? Instead, we may need to go where we have concentrated power and bring our, you know, with the brain drain that has left back there, mm-hmm. and start making power moves, yeah. Which is why you see all these Black people coming together as collectives buying land,
yeah.
in rural Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama, because at this point in time, we need to let these folks just, you know, do whatever they're gonna do with each other. But in the meantime, we need to start putting together a strategy for ourselves, because we're trying to sit here begging for something to happen, mm-hmm. and we need to actually create it for ourselves. That's what I think.
Now, I want to kind of touch on this particular topic, still within the same vein of what we're talking about right now, but with everything that has taken place with the Capitol and even before the Capitol, right? Just everything that's been going on with Black people. I don't know if we talked about this on the show. It might have been offline, but when we were talking about, voting, right? And the importance of voting. And even though we understand our place as Black people in this country, we still understand the importance of voting, but that when these situations keep happening, i.e. the Capitol falling, right? And all this other stuff, you still have a large, and I would say large because I see it's a growing number of Black people who are like, this is why I don't vote, because there's no difference. This is why I don't focus on voting. This is exactly why I say voting isn't important. This is why I say that we need to just be about our own communities and leave these white people to do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And I find that every time a situation either like this or something again that, you know, kind of reminds us where we are as Black people in this country, it further emboldens these, I don't know if they're Black liberationists or whatever. I don't know what box to put them in for them to now come out shooting from the hip, as they always do, to say, this is again why we are not involved in the political system here in this country. This country is not for us. It's never been for us. Look at what's going on. That's why we just need to turn off the TVs and focus on our communities. Don't vote. Stop being involved in these white people's processes. What is your response to these HOTEP individuals that come out with this rhetoric?
So I agree with them and I disagree at the same time. I agree with them because the thing is that we are always asking for folks to do for us, right? And these people have made it clear that they don't give a damn, right? Yeah. And the Capitol was a reflection of that, right? Because nobody got shot in the head. I didn't see any tear gas go off, no flash bombs. I didn't see no bullets flying. You know, there's literally
that one girl who got shot in the neck.
But she got shot in the neck. And it was a clean shot. I was like very impressed, actually, because I was like, shoot. I was like, wow, that's a clean shot. Like, that was meant to kill. Mm-hmm. But the reason why that happened was because she was coming through the window, and that's where Congress was. All the congressmen were there, right? Congresspersons were there, and they had not been fully moved out of that area. Mm-hmm. And as someone was saying, one of the congresspersons, they were on the, I think yesterday, they said, had they not shot her. It was a place where they would have been surrounded. Like, they couldn't, like, it was like they had to, it was no way, it was, there was nothing else to do but to shoot her. Otherwise, the people would have come through and you would have had dead congressmen and congresswomen all over the place because they couldn't get out any other way. Mm-hmm. But, and that's why I was saying that this thing on the Capitol is very serious. And I really hope they treat it as such. And I do hope people that get arrested and they actually get sentenced, and I hope they actually serve jail time. The problem is that they have not arrested the folks who killed any of the Black people who died over the past like couple of years. I don't know what Breonna Taylor's folks, like, what is going on? Like, nobody has gone to jail for anything. Mm-hmm. And so that shows you what white America is really about. And so that's why people who say don't vote, I understand why withholding a vote makes a whole lot of sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because they keep coming to us and pandering to us when it's time for an election. But then when we ask for stuff, even with Joe Biden, I'm not impressed. We keep asking for him to do something and he had to talk about what he ain't going to do. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so the thing is that if we just totally was like, you know what, screw you and everything you got, we'll be fine. Because I'm going to tell you who don't go kissing people's behinds. Asian people.
And the Jewish people.
Yes, but yet there's a Chinatown in every dang city. In fact, there's two in freaking New York. There's one in Brooklyn and there's one in freaking like downtown Manhattan. The thing is that,
and even in Queens, they got a whole section in Queens.
Sure do. There you go. Absolutely. So they have sat there, pulled their resources. And that's what I was saying. When Black people started, because of this whole COVID thing and everything that's going on, start pulling together their resources and buying land, that's what I'm talking about. The Asian people don't go to nobody asking for a doggone thing. They do for self. You're starting to see some Asian politicians,
yeah,
right?
You are seeing
who's starting to realize that, you know, maybe we could even get further. But here's the thing. You've never seen them beg for nothing. And even with the Jews, you don't really. But you know what? There's a lot of Jews in Congress and Jews in other places.
There's a whole bunch of Jewish politicians.
Right. But I think the Asians are the most sense as far as using as a model, because there is they have created a whole system where they go into cities and they set up their own little areas with, I mean, the signs aren't even in English. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's some, like, you went downtown and said this sign is going to be these Chinese characters and screw everybody else. Like, how do you even get that done?
Exactly. And right. That part makes a lot of sense. And I do agree. Because, again, even with the, with the hope tech mentality, I do agree to an extent. I see where it comes from because people are frustrated, right? But at the end of the day, too, though, I feel like there still has to be some understanding as to why it is important to, to try to push that, voting agenda. Because look at what we're seeing in Georgia.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the voting agenda is really necessary on the local level more than anything.
Not the national, right? More so, yeah.
Right. The national stuff gets a little sketchy, but it's still helpful. But the local level is where it's more impactful. In fact, you remember when COVID first started happening and Trump was basically saying, screw everybody that wasn't a Republican. Cuomo had to go down and he lended support to, it was like all the black mayors, right? To the mayor of, I think he went to Atlanta, of course, with Keisha. And then he went to, I think, the mayor of Savannah. And I think it was Macon or somewhere. And then he went down to Houston with Sylvester Turner. And I think Dallas. So it was all these black mayors that were, running the city. So he went and started giving out PPE to them. And so what's interesting is that in Biden's plan, when he becomes sworn in, his rollout for COVID is going to be through the mayors, not through the governors, but the mayors. Why? Because if you have to deal with all these Republican governors, you're dealing with a bunch of bullcrap. Mm-hmm. But most of the mayor, so black people can actually obtain political power in a city. Mayor is probably as high as we can go. Maybe a congressperson, right? Mm-hmm. It's difficult to get that whole Senate support. But a mayor, yeah, a lot of your mayors across the city are black. Chicago, Atlanta, Houston, Dallas, you start going, so then there you go. BMO, so like, we love him, right? Yeah. Shorty. Poof your man. Right. So the thing is that it's easier. So my thing is that we're team players. Like, we down for the cause. Like, if it's going to help the community, we're down with it. We don't have time for all this stuff these people have going on. Like, they are not loyal to each other. They change up they change their underwear. So that's where I think it's important. The rest of the stuff, like, I do think we need to vote, but I do understand why people would not vote. And honestly, I don't know. Like, this past election, like, I got it. I was like,
it's the local level that's important for me. Like, I agree with you. I do see where it comes from because it is frustrating. And the last two elections, so it's not even just this election. For me, the last two elections have kind of been a dub, okay, I guess we'll vote for this person. Like, I was not a fan of, Hillary hot sauce in your bag, Clinton, to be honest. I know I get a lot of flack for saying that because a lot of people that surround me are. I'm not a fan of sleepy Joe Biden. Never was, never will. In fact, the only way he might even get any type of interest for me is if he does something with them student loans. But outside of that, it's we haven't been excited to go out and actually vote for a president in over 8 years now, right? 9-10 years, right? Or whatever, since Obama. I would say that people are just not, and even with the Obama, presidency, you still have people who are kind of like, yeah, we voted for him because he was black. Really, we wanted to see that in our lifetime. So we haven't really had, presidents in place where the people really felt like they actually had a real decision in the matter. Mm-hmm. And I think that, so I totally understand why people feel like it doesn't matter who we vote for. This shit's just going to be whatever it is. But it's the local level that I think that really makes a difference when we're talking about what's going on the very, very local level within the communities. That's why I'm like, I understand not voting, but at the same time, we're living in communities. We're complaining about basic things like sanitation and whatnot. Like, what are you going to do?
But I also think that if you're going to be in politics, you need to be actually doing stuff for the people. Like, me and you yesterday were in this room where it was somebody who was running for office. And
we not gonna drop no names.
We not gonna drop any names. No. And it got, it was a Q&A portion and it got kind of volatile. But you know what? It seemed like the question that was being asked of the person was, you know, what are you going to do for the Black community? And the answer was they didn't want to go against, I think, the DA. Now, I don't know all the backstory, right? Mm-hmm. But what I can say is that if I was talking to a Black political official and I was saying, hey, these are problems and you don't want to go against the DA, well, if the DA is not playing on the side of Black people, then who do you work for? Right. So it just so here's the thing. When it comes to political officials, we have to, you know, a lot of the people, even on the lower level, we got to be careful, folks who are being puppet mastered. What I notice in New York is political officials Black political officials will come out in full support of the Jewish community when stuff goes down. But I don't see the Jewish community coming and supporting us. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be very careful of that, because there's a lot of, you know, behind Lincoln going on that's not really, is not to our benefit. And I don't know, why do we feel our hands are tied where we have to go run behind these other people? And not to say there's anything wrong with the Jews, but they don't support us, right? And if you were to walk down any street in America where it's like the Hasidic community and fall out on the street, literally, they're not going to help you, right? They're not, because
not the good Samaritans.
No, they're not. Because they don't even help just regular WASP white people, because they're not Jews. So there's the thing, it's like, why are we going out our way for people who are not really supporting us, right? Mm-hmm. And well, political officials, some of them are being controlled by other folks. And so the thing is that whereas they're swinging government contracts to who they made deals with, it mm-hmm. typically doesn't, those people don't look like us. Yeah. So I think that if people are going to be on a local level, you know, being in the political arena, you need to utilize, you know, your power to help Black people for real, for real. I'm talking about making sure that we're getting the deals. For example, I'm in Louisiana right now, and I saw on TV that there were the company that was packing the ice created, they had the dry ice that they were utilizing. They were creating the dry ice to put in the, for when they were, I think it was Pfizer maybe, mm-hmm.
For the vaccines. Yeah.
Right. So they were actually the people who do the ice, just make the dry ice, were right in my city. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang, they're making all the dries for Pfizer to ship out all across the country. And I was like, I wonder if there's a Black business that had that type of thing, which I'm sure there's somebody Black that got an ice business. Right. Yeah. But the thing is that we, even though we have a Black mayor, they swung that deal over to a white guy. Mm-hmm. Right. Then there was a whole company that did the packing of it. So then they swung that whole deal over to another white company. And I'm just like, you know what? That's when we miss out. It's like you, as not trying to say you got to play favors, but if you're going to be a Black political official with access to certain stuff, then help your dang community. Exactly. But the thing is that you probably owed somebody, right?
That's usually how a lot of times these political things work, right? There's always somebody that you owe, and you have to, you have to make good on your debt or whatever it is at some point. And that's, and giving contracts, whether it be to that individual themselves or their children or one of their kinfolks, is how you, in a sense, make good on, you know, okay, you know, you're going to donate this amount of money to my campaign. I'm going to make sure that the next government contract is going to go toward, you know, your way. And I think that that's where, unfortunately, that's where a lot of the distrust in the community comes from too, because we see these things, we're not stupid. And mm-hmm. so, you know, ideally you would, you know, you have Black people in office, again, not to play favorites, because, you know, if you're representing the entire city, it's not just Black people in there, but you want to find a way to even the playing field, even maybe a little more on the people of color side, because we've been oppressed for so long. It's your opportunity to kind of make us a little whole, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of politicians miss that mark because of the way that they did get into office and mm-hmm. you know, so it's a very, very tricky and sticky place to be in. But I do believe in the political process, not to say that it's a perfect system. I think that there has to be some system until we can figure out our own, I don't know, national party or whatever the hell it is that people are trying to do to really keep us unified and organized and whatnot. There's still rules to the land. Obviously, it goes mm-hmm. to shit, but there's still a process. And I still believe that, you know, we have to, in a sense, you know, abide by the process, or at least be cognizant of the process, and we're mm-hmm. subject to it, because we live here. We live here, we're subject to it. But I don't know. I'm really interested in seeing what takes place in the next coming weeks. I mean, apparently, you know, Twitter and all, and Pinterest and all these other groups are banning, you know, they're banning Trump, but I would really like to
see. Well, they had to. I mean, they had to, because any involvement that they may have, and I may be wrong, but by, you know, legally, I would think if this is part of a criminal conspiracy, your involvement in that, where he was tweeting, I think it seems like it creates some liability, mm-hmm. right? So at I'm no point, yeah. Yeah, at some point it does, somewhere down the line, because you allowed these messages to go out on your platform and you knew that this was criminal in nature. So you're involved. So, I mean, people are just trying to save their own asses. Like, I'm not impressed by any of these people. No. Canceling them. When Black Lives Matter happened, we told them this dude was a freaking idiot and nobody believed us, because it was still aiding and abetting white supremacy. And even Mark Zuckerberg was down with this crap. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, you would be like, dude, you're like millennial Gen XYES. You know what I'm saying? Like, you should be down with, like, you know, more progressive thought. But he wasn't. He was down with this crap. Yeah. So, you know, even the cabinet members resigning, like, we at first people were like, oh, they're resigning. No, they just don't want to. They're trying to save their own professional reputations, and they're trying not to invoke the 25th Amendment. So it's nothing to be, you know, it's still people trying to save their behinds on everything that they do. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just like, whatever. Like, I'm not impressed with this crap.
And nobody should be impressed with that. It's not anything to be like, wow, look, you know, change is coming. Change is not coming. Like you said, people are just trying to cover their asses, as they should, right? I mean, at some point, the ship has already been sinking, and I guess you just don't want to, you want to make sure that you can still float.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be very interesting to see how all this plays out, I think, in the next couple of weeks. But
yeah. I think it's going to be some other issues. I'm glad the Capitol thing happened now, because a lot of my friends who were AKAs and alphas were really trying to go down to D.C. to be in support of Kamala on their first fam mm-hmm. thing. And I get that. But now people are kind of pulling back. Yeah, and so it would have. Yeah. And the thing is that what I'm saying, like, you know, I love my AKA friends, but, you know, I don't know if they bought that life if it came down to having to run.
I mean, well, we already know. But
I feel like my sorrows, we be ready for it a little bit more. And if, you know, our brother fraternity, even though they say we don't have one, but if us and the Qs were like down there, yes, we might get handled a little differently. But my AKA friends,
they need to send a Zoom link at this point. Send a Zoom link.
Yeah.
Do that shit underground. Send a Zoom link and call it a day.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because this is too much. And I don't want to see Black people involved. And then also, you got to remember, Black folks are historic HBCU people. It would have been way too many of our, like, Black intelligentsia and young Black people who would be, you know.
Yeah.
Ready to pass it, you know, pass the torch on us. Like, too much brain power have been lost to have
HBCU people and you know, everyone else Black who was planning to, I don't know, observe this historic moment, stay your ass at home. Watch the memes and the reels on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. Hopefully there will be a Zoom link and call it a day.
I know.
Call it a day.
We can't afford to get caught up in that crap.
Catch the live stream. Trust me.
Yeah, and they had those bombs they were about to set off. Anybody got time for that, girl?
Oh, anyway. Boy. Welcome, Taki. Thank you again for being, again, I mean, you're literally like the resident co-host for all things ridiculous in this country. Like, it's interesting to get, you know, the perspective of a former professor, current professor, a professor at some point, and somebody who keeps their ears to the street and can really articulate and not shoot from the hip what's happening in these streets. And I think the great thing with you is you do have, you know, some hotep in you, so you can appeal to, you know, to that aspect of things when it comes to the Black people, but also, you know, what I would like to call a little more practical with respect to where we are in this country. So thank you so much for taking the time to break some stuff down.
Hey, anytime. I'm always.
Well, all right, everyone. Thank you for tuning into another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys have a great week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
Can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJ.